Welcome back to another edition of the Badger Extra Podcast. I am Jay Kokorowski, Badgers athletics reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal and Badger Extra. You'll also hear coming up my tag team partner who covers Wisconsin football, Colton Bartholomew. Just letting you know, this will be published on Wednesday evening. Likely you'll hear this Thursday morning. We've broken up the episode. We have a two-part episode coming up. We recorded one part Tuesday night, and then another on early Wednesday evening. As you know, news breaks. You won't hear this later on, but Wisconsin did have two players announce their intentions to enter the transfer portal. That both are backups. That's quarterback Miles Burkett and offensive lineman Dylan Barrett. We'll have more about transfer portal stuff, obviously, probably next week and going forward this month. But without further ado, let's get to the rest of the episode. Starting now. We're recording on Tuesday night, man. Or at least starting our podcast with multiple parts of this podcast. It got busy tonight, man. Braylon Allen, late afternoon, announces his declaration into the 2024 NFL Draft. Cooper Catalano, the future. Talking about the now past and now the future. Cooper Catalano, the 2025 linebacker from Germantown High School, announces his commitment to the program, which is a big get for within the state borders. It's been nonstop, man, and I know you and I have both been writing since about, 4:30-ish, maybe even before that. And then on top of that, we're not even going to get a chance to talk about the Axe game after what we witnessed in Minneapolis.
Yeah, that's kind of wild. I mean, the Allen news wasn't a surprise to anybody that was paying attention to not just him, but what he had been saying over the last few weeks. But the timing is a little surprising. I thought maybe he'd wait till later in the week, or, you know, you just never know with these things. Maybe they just needed to get home and get that video produced essentially. And that's what he was going to drop it. So whatever it was, not a surprise. And I think, you know, as I mentioned, you listen to Allen talk the last few weeks, and anytime anything about his future was brought up, it's like, oh, I'm not sure, I'm not ready to talk about it yet. And then he gives you that smile and it's like, you know what I'm saying here, right? It's, I'm not talking about it right now, but you know what I'm doing. I have to appreciate Braylon Allen about this, because he's been open since the second he got here that he wanted to be a three-year and done guy. He wanted to get to the NFL about as quickly as he could, and he made it happen. He performed well enough that he thinks he's got his best shot to get drafted right now, and more power to him, man. I don't begrudge anybody. At this point, covering college football, I don't begrudge anybody that says, I want to get out of this system, I want to go to the pros where I'm not treated like a quasi-professional athlete, I'm not hammering weird endorsement deals, so that's my only pay. Like, he's going to go to the league and share in the actual pie. So good for him. And again, not a really a surprise here.
Not at all. And so with that, so letting people know what's going to happen with this podcast. So the regular season for Wisconsin football is done. And so we're not going to really go back and talk about the Minnesota game. There's, you know, we're not going to talk about the Big Ten championship game between Iowa and Michigan. What we are going to do, we're going to talk after the break about just Braylon Allen, his impact. What's his legacy overall? Just where he stands within Wisconsin football lore with the running back room. But then we'll also transition, second part of the podcast, Michael McCleary, our men's basketball beat reporter, will join us, and we'll talk with him about good start for Wisconsin basketball after a couple of losses. They've rebounded well, especially in Fort Myers. We'll talk more about just what's ahead. Marquette coming to the Kohl Center later this week, and a big stretch for Wisconsin, a very difficult stretch in non-conference play. Non-conference and conference play coming up. So stay tuned. Take a break. We'll see you back in just a bit. Okay, we are back here on the Badger Extra Podcast. Jake Okorowski, Colton Bartholomew here. Colton, man, let's address the present, the impact with Wisconsin and what this means for Wisconsin right now. And you and I have a piece out on Badger Extra and the Wisconsin State Journal talking about who could replace this production. But there's one candidate that seems the most qualified, though that his status is right now we don't know. It seems unresolved, at least publicly. But then there's also some younger pieces to the puzzle that are unknowns.
Yeah, I would take it even more short term here is that you look at the bowl game, right? Like Breon Allen's not going to play in the bowl game. You look for the Badgers. The backfield has not been very good since Chasm Lewis, who you're referring to there, with the kind of up in the air status of him. And then with Breon Allen out, you know, they averaged almost exactly half the output rushing with those guys out of the lineup that they did with them in the lineup. So it's going to fall on guys like Jackson Aker and Cade Yacomelli. Aker was hurt against Minnesota and sat out that game. So we'll see what his status is in a few weeks, whatever that bowl game is. It looks like it's going to be the last week of December, first week of January, right in that range. So we'll see who's in that backfield, but it's probably not going to be pretty. I'll be honest with you. It's probably going to be up to Tanner Mordecai in the passing game to get it done against whoever they play, because it just hasn't been all that effective without Allen or Maluzzi. But to your point, on our story of Badger Extra, you know, Maluzzi's the number one option, right? If Maluzzi is willing to come back, he would take a red shirt this season. He only played in four games, so he has that option in front of him. If he does that, comes back for a sixth college season, that'd be a boon for Wisconsin. You've got a guy who already, you know, fits this system, already knows this system, and is a great leader for your team, and is somebody that Coach Luke Fickell has been very, very high on since the moment he got here. So if you're just drawing it up, if you're the Badgers coaches, you say, if we could have our druthers, yes, we want Chasm Luzzi to come back. If he decides, you know what, I've been hurt the last 3 years, let's move on, see if I have a pro chance, or, you know, try to see what's up for my life next, then you're looking at the guys I mentioned before, Aker and Yacomelli, and then the three recruits that you lay out really well in the piece, three guys that they're all really high on, Dupree, Gideon Ituka, and then I'm blanking on the third now, of course.
Dylan Jones.
Thank you. Yes, Dylan Jones. So all three of those guys are very high on and all have, I think, some things that they're going to bring to the table. And assuming they all come here and sign and get on campus, I think there's potential for a true backfield by committee when those guys are here. Expecting them to come in as freshmen and do it right away? Tough.
That's rough.
It's really...
Absolutely.
It takes a very special guy to do it. If you look at Wisconsin backs, you know, you're talking about the elite of the elite that do that as a true freshman, like the Jonathan Taylors, the Braylon Allen, kind of. You know, he still had some help from Maluzzi, but he was doing it for two-thirds of his freshman season. So, yeah, it's definitely a little bit murky. And, you know, I think if I'm Luke Fickell, I'm texting Ches Maluzzi tonight. Like, hey, man, there's a whole lot of carries available for you. Like, I know if you think you got a shot at the pros, like, you've been hurt. I don't know if you're going to get drafted. You can come back. Like, I'm trying to set that up because what this offense needs is some continuity. And long-term here, I think what they want to have is that committee and the guys that can rotate in that running back spot. But going into 2024, they'll definitely be better off if you had Chesney Lucy back there.
Right. Yeah, agreed there. Let's talk about Braylon Allen. Let's talk about his stats. 597 rushes, so just three shy of 600. Very Jonathan Taylor-esque. 3,494 yards, 35 rushing touchdowns, like 5.85-ish yards per carry. They round up to 5.9. I guess for him, we'll talk about I put out those career stats. Just we'll talk about his legacy and where he is all time, or in terms of like the standing among the lore, because we'll talk about the all-time ranks in school history in a second. But what's his legacy in your eyes, man?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because obviously you think, just think of his story, reclassifies, was recruited as a safety and a linebacker and all that stuff, and then switches to running back before that true freshman season. It's interesting because I think he's in a weird spot where he was very good from the moment that he got a significant role in the backfield. And I think he was very good up until, anytime he was healthy, he was very good until his last game. I don't know if he ever made that jump into like great or like elite. That guy, I mean, he got put in so many different roles in this offense where there were so many times where he was the only thing working. So he just had to continue carrying the ball. But I think that he's caught in this weird middle ground where he was very good. I don't know if he ever got to that, like, Jonathan Taylor, Melvin Gordon level of, like, elite. However, he had a lot more challenges, I think, at times than those guys did, where, you know, this offensive line took a couple steps back, I think, from those lines that those guys had. And this passing game, even though this year with the changes and everything, never quite clicked to the degree that some of those other teams had. Like, you know,
2017, Jonathan Taylor.
Team was a passing efficiency, you know, clinic, but Jack Cohen would get the ball to Quintez Cephus and they could attack downfield. They used the fact that teams are getting ready for the run better than I think the Allen teams did. And, you know, this guy we talked about before we started recording, he had three running back coaches in 3 years, one of whom was the offensive lineman and offensive line coach. So it's like, you know, I think he got some challenges that other great Badger running backs didn't have. And I think maybe that's a part of why we didn't see that final jump. Maybe it happens in the NFL with really good coaching and, you know, just kind of dedicating his life even more to just the training and the physical aspects of it. And we'll see. But I think that's kind of his legacy, like very good for a long time. And the injuries are part of it too. Like he's always banged up. It seemed like there's always something, but at the same time, a guy that answered the bell of carrying the offense from a very young age throughout his whole career. So a lot of bullet points there, but I think that's kind of how you have to look at it, who he was as a college running back.
And so with that, final discussion point about Braylon Allen before we get to some basketball talk. Just a standing within the Wisconsin football lore, within the running backs, which is obviously not just Jonathan Taylor or Melvin Gordon. You're talking about James White, who's also, by the way, contributed and got 1,000 yards as a true freshman back in 2010 during that Rose Bowl run. Monte Ball, Brent Moss, among others. He ranks 9th all-time in program history in career rushing yards, or yards rushing. As you point out in your article, he ranks 2nd among Wisconsin rushers to play only 3 seasons behind who? Jonathan Taylor. And so among that, yards per carry, if I'm not mistaken, he's ranked 4th all time.
Yep.
5.85, whatever. So he's had, you know, how many rushing games, 100 yard rushing games, 2,100 yard rushing games in his career. So this is the lore is there. And in 3 seasons. And so it would have been interesting to see what he could have done, but I don't know much else within the offense that he could do. Yeah, he can catch the ball. It wasn't great around, you know, obviously in terms of the yards off the catch with the new instance of the offense, because they're still implementing things and some things just didn't work out this season. But, you know, I guess anything else that stands out about just his standing within the pantheon of Wisconsin running backs?
Yeah, I think the fact that he got the top 10, despite the fact that this team didn't get, you know, multiple postseason games like some of the Taylor teams did, or, you know, a passing offense that struggled as mightily as it did at times, it is commendable. And I think the fact that he's only going to play 3 years and ends up with 9th all time is pretty impressive as well. I think the thing that jumps out to me as a whole, though, is this is a guy that I think more than maybe that next continuation of a Melvin Gordon, where grew up a Badgers fan, in-state guy. You know, you look at the list, like some of these guys are in-state, but most of them aren't. Like, obviously there's a New Jersey connection that's very famed here in the backfield. But I think just the idea that a guy watched Badger football, basically watched Melvin Gordon, said, that's who I want to be like. And then kind of made it happen. Maybe didn't quite get there, but was pretty close. Pretty impressive stuff. And I think if you're just talking about all time, you know, he's up there statistically, despite a lot of challenges, as I mentioned before, the other guys didn't have. And I think that's commendable. And I think the tough thing is he got put in this era where, you know, Quall Chris gets fired and that whole season kind of went sideways. He was still productive. You know, 1,242 yards last season, despite everything, despite missing a game. But I think it was just put him in different eras of Wisconsin football. And we might be talking about even more monstrous stats. I think he was just maybe you could say wrong era for where this program was at. But then you could also say, like, if the Wisconsin didn't have Braylon Allen the last few years, like, things could have gone really sideways. So I don't know if what that means for his legacy. I just think that it's impressive to think about the fact that a guy came in with a very specific goal and pretty much made it happen. I mean, the All Big Ten running backs are going to come out tomorrow. I think he's going to get his third straight second team honor. Outside shot of it first, but I think he's going to get a third straight second team honor. And for a guy that played these seasons, as we all know, 17, 18, 19 years old, pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. Consensus two-time All Big Ten second team selection. And yeah, a kid that did it young, you know, 17 years old and reclassifies. And so with that, what else do we got going on for Badger Extra this week, man? Because there's no football game for us to cover. We have our X's and O's that we had that was out. Obviously, we recorded on Tuesday, so Tuesday morning, so this morning. But it's viewed out. We queue up a Braylon Allen run, probably his last explosive run in that regard. But then what else you got with, obviously, bowl stuff coming up later this week?
Yeah, so we'll check out Badger Extra Wednesday morning. There'll be a story about the bowl games that are most likely from the Badgers right now. Looks like there are two that are really locked in on the Badgers. So narrowed it down from last week where there's probably about six options. So check that out. And then on Friday, we're going to have a story looking at which positions have the most likelihood of the Badgers attacking the portal for. If you follow on Twitter or on social media at all, you've probably already seen one of them at defensive line and a couple others that they're already putting out offers to. So I think that's something to keep an eye on throughout this next month here as the portal truly opens next Monday. It's open now for the lower levels, but it truly opens next Monday with the FBS teams and the FBS players. So it's going to be pretty crazy in the next few weeks where you're preparing for a bowl game, which I think is going to be against a decent opponent, depending on how things go here. And then you're seeing how your roster is going to change in the next 4 weeks. So lots of stuff to keep your eye on, Badger Extra.
Absolutely, man. We're going to take another we'll take another quick break. We'll come back. Michael McCleary will join the show, and we're going to talk some men's basketball coming off a win over Western Illinois. And then the Badgers will host Marquette before a big stretch coming forward. So stay tuned. All right, we are back from our second break here on the Badger Extra podcast, and coming to us now, doesn't look too tan. Don't have much of a sunburn from your brief time in Fort Myers last week, man. We got Michael McCleary, our men's basketball beat reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal and Badger Extra. And Mike, man, did you get a chance to enjoy Florida first and foremost before we get into basketball? Did you have a good time down in Fort Myers when you were able to?
Yeah. I'm a big walks guy. So, you know, when it's warm outside, I could go out and just kind of walk down the block. And you know, you say I don't have any sunburn, but from like an hour and a half outside, I went to the game on Wednesday, and I was told I had sunburn all over my face. So, you know, it did not take long for me to get some color, but you know, it was fun. It was nice to get out and you know, kind of explore in a place I've never been to.
And you know, being a Cape Coral native, I know I told you about that before, you know, about last week and whatnot, but it's beautiful area down there. And with that, Wisconsin comes away 2023 Fort Myers tip-off champs. Two wins, you know, a big one over Virginia, number 24 Virginia at the time, 65-41, and one that not many people thought that would happen. And then a 69-61 win over SMU. And no, that's not a football score from two air raid offenses, I promise you there. And that's actually a basketball score. But and then Monday, Western Illinois, 71-49. They're riding a four-game winning streak heading into a key stretch. They're 5-2 overall. They're number 23 in KenPom rankings. Just, I guess, and you know, where do you feel Greg Gard and his team are at heading into this, you know, a difficult stretch where obviously hosting Marquette, number 3 in the nation, and then you have to go to East Lansing to take on Michigan State, and then you come back, you know, a week from this upcoming Saturday to host number 2 Arizona.
Yeah, I think it's sort of right where I guess expected them to be. if you flip the Providence and the Virginia wins and losses, because I think that's where I would have been at the beginning of the year. I had pretty strong confidence that they were going to get at least one of two in Fort Myers, but I think that's probably pretty naive of me to think that Wisconsin men's basketball is not going to win November early season tournament. I mean, that just seems to be what they do. Yeah, I mean, that Providence game caught me by surprise, but the Virginia game in a similar way, winning by a similar point spread. I mean, that caught me by surprise too. So 5-2 seems about right. But it sets up for, like you said, it's the stretch. You can't lose all three of them. That would be quite damaging, I guess, at this early stage of the season.
You know, they beat one ranked team, and obviously they lost to a top 10 Tennessee program, but you also have two top 10 teams, top five teams going forth, and it just not coming in because Arizona's at Tucson. But you have, I guess, with this heavy and difficult non-conference schedule, man, do you feel this tough non-conference schedule has already helped Wisconsin in your eyes?
Yeah, and Greg Gard was saying, Wisconsin men's basketball coach Greg Gard was saying stuff about that after the Virginia win, where, you know, he's been asked about the scheduling and, you know, sort of how it got really, really difficult fast. But that Tennessee game came in their first week of the season. And Tennessee has continued to prove since that game that they're one of the best teams in the country. So that loss is not going to look really bad on paper going forward. But it's, you know, Providence, again, it's another good team, came right out of that Tennessee loss with another game against them. And then, you know, he was saying that it just, those types of games really help them prepare better for games like Virginia and SMU, where, you know, obviously they played a lot better. You know, because I think they go into that Providence game and, you know, I highly doubt they're downplaying Providence. I mean, Providence, historically, it's a good program. Obviously, the coaching change with Kim English coming in there, you know, it leaves them with a little bit of an unknown. But, you know, that's a good program. Big East environments are typically difficult environments to play in. You're making a big road trip to get there. But still, they got totally shocked. They got dominated. So, you know, you leave that game knowing that you got to fix some things, and, you know, it might be good to have a game like that early in the season, but, you know, hopefully maybe, you know, when you go up against a team like that, that looking to, you know, get up on you early, then you won't fall back behind as much as they did early, where they were kind of out of it within the first couple minutes.
I mean, in your eyes, man, just before conference, the consistent conference play, because they do play Michigan State next week, but before they hit the consistent Big Ten schedule, just what else do you think this team needs to address before you hit, you know, what will be a crucial time coming up in the new year?
Yeah, I think they've been talking about defense all season long. You saw it a little bit with, you know, they kept on getting beat baseline, and, you know, the first guy has to obviously, you know, keep their man in front of them. And that has been something that's come up at times this year. Obviously, there's some rotation things that are a little bit more inside baseball. But, you know, when you look at their defense, I mean, the numbers have not been too good, at least in the games prior to the Fort Myers performances. But, you know, I mean, they played really, really good on the defensive end against Virginia. I'm not quite sure how good of an offensive team Virginia is. And then they played better against SMU, but, you know, they also had some lapses in the early part of SMU before kind of buckling down and, you know, getting some stops late in the game as they sort of exploded offensively themselves. But, you know, right now they're a rhythm team, almost a little bit too much so, where they have sort of, even against Western Illinois, a game that they won by, you know, 20 plus points, you know, they had a moment where they let Western Illinois jump on them and, you know, they cut the lead as low at eight, right at the beginning of the second half. And they went to the second half with a pretty big lead. I think it was 16 points. So, Yeah, I mean, they just allow teams to go on runs against them. And I think that has a lot to do with they don't get their offense really much outside of just these small bursts. And also, you know, there's some defensive lapses too, where, you know, it's kind of just on one end and at the other end, it's kind of all coming at the same time. But yeah, I mean, I think more consistency is obviously something you always seek at this early stage of the season. But I think some players and some units are really starting to play a lot more uniform in what they're, I guess, expected coming into the year and, I guess, coming into conference play.
So looking ahead immediately, and I know we're recording on a Wednesday night for people that don't know, just because of the fluid nature of college basketball, college football, for that matter, too, as you'll hear within this podcast or have heard from this podcast already today. You are looking at, you know, Marquette right now, top five team. They're number five in KenPom, 6-1 on the year, averaging over 81 points per game, allowing almost about 66 per contest, shooting nearly 50%. They're shooting 49% from the field. 3-point percentage, only about less. It's less than 33%. They're also getting out rebounded, and their, you know, team free throw percentage isn't necessarily great at 68%. But they're reeling off wins, and their only loss is to, again, a top two Purdue program last week as well. Just what do you see in terms of matchups, a breakdown of what Marquette will bring to the Kohl Center, where it should be a pretty, you know, vivacious, very much an energetic crowd for the I-94 rivalry?
Yeah, I think Oso Igodoro is going to be probably the toughest matchup that Stephen Crowell's faced all year. You know, he's a guy that's getting NBA buzz, extremely good athlete, really good touch around the rim. You know, just, you know, quick second jump, like all the qualities you want of a big man, especially, you know, one who's playing at 6'11" and, you know, has put up decent amount of bulk in his, few years at Marquette. But yeah, it's a lot of the same guys that are, you know, playing in the game last year. You know, Marquette, like Wisconsin, returned a lot of guys, Cam Jones, Tyler Kolek, you know, all those guys are coming back, this year playing well. Obviously, Tyler is, you know, the guy who initiates their offense, and, you know, he's going to make things go. But Cam Jones is their leading scorer, and, you know, a lot of shooting on the team, a lot of athleticism around the rim. You know, just watching them in Maui, I mean, it's clear they're a really, really good team. I believe they beat Kansas down there before losing to Purdue. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, beat number one Kansas 73-59. Yeah. So, you know, a 4-point victory.
I mean, you know, there was a scenario where if they squeezed that win out against Purdue, I mean, almost a certain scenario that if they won against Purdue, they would be coming to the Kohl Center as the number one team in the country. And, you know, they were a couple possessions short of that. So, you know, I don't think you could downplay, you know, I mean, Purdue's the number one now. They're going to be the number one, I think, for a while. I think they were one of the best teams in the country last year. They returned most of their guys and, you know, obviously recruited well as Purdue does. And, you know, so they're a really good team. And, you know, so you can't knock Marquette really much for losing to them. There's a scenario where Marquette's the second best team in the country, just based on some of the games that have been played and some of the wins that the Golden Eagles already have. So yeah, they're really, really tough. I mean, this game, this was one of Wisconsin's signature wins last year. If they could get a win, even at home, you know, obviously last season came on the road as those interchange. But even at home, this has the potential to be, going into NCAA tournament, tournament selection, one of the best wins that Wisconsin could get in its season outside of those Purdue matchups, which they get two cracks at Purdue this year.
All right, for Wisconsin to win, give me the top two things that need to happen.
Ooh, that's tough. You know, one of the things that we've kind of seen recently is Chucky Hepburn has gone on these sort of late game surges. I believe it was off by like 1 second for the last couple games, where against SMU in the championship game to help lift Wisconsin as they were going on that run at the end of the game. I believe it was 4:36. He scored 10 points. It was a stretch of 4:36. And then in 4:37, he scored 11 points at the Badgers' last win over Western Illinois. So, And he's going on these really, really quick, incredibly efficient, and also kind of incredible to watch runs. You know, he's done a great job of distributing the ball all year long, but those runs have been really eye-opening in the sense that he has a chance to take over a game like this. And, you know, you need a special performance if you want to beat a team like Marquette. So I think Chucky being maybe having his best game of the year is a big deal. But also just the forwards controlling the glass, and that you saw a little bit of that from Stephen Crowell, where, you know, he hasn't been quite on his offensive game all year long. He's been playing a lot better of late. But, you know, the big swing against Western Illinois, when Western Illinois was cutting it down and then the Badgers shifted that to start running away with the game, was Stephen Crowell got a bunch of offensive rebounds, pats it out, got a three of his own. But, you know, it's less of the offense and more just being dominant down low, being a dominant force. He's some of his best games last year. I mean, thinking back to that Hunter Dickinson matchup when Michigan came to the Kohl Center for the first time. I mean, that happens not because Stephen Crowell goes off for 30 against them. It's because Stephen Crowell had a solid 11-10. I don't know what his exact numbers, but it was close to a double-double, if not a double-double. And, you know, you get your points, but, you know, you control the glass and you play good defense down low. And I think Stephen Crowell has a chance to swing a lot of games for Wisconsin just by playing that way. And, you know, Tyler Wall's been getting his scoring up, but, you know, defense down low, you know, with Crowell, Wall, and even off the bench with Carter Gilmore or a few other guys. I mean, I think that's really important to making sure that Marquette kind of has to force a little bit.
You know, and next week we'll try to make time to talk in between, obviously, whatever happens with Wisconsin and its boldest destination on the football side of things. So we won't talk about Arizona yet, probably till next week. But let's look at Michigan State really quick, and a team that, obviously, Tom Izzo, one of the legends of college basketball, and just what he's done in East Lansing with that program. But a team that 4-3 overall, you know, and I guess from your vantage point, just, you know, going to East Lansing, obviously it's going to be, it's a dire road environment for Wisconsin and for any team going there. But just what do you see from Michigan State early on, and what Wisconsin will have to do after, you know, and preparing quickly after the I-94 rivalry and then flipping the switch over to the Spartans?
Yeah, I mean, Michigan State's a team that has a lot of the same makeup as a team like Wisconsin. And it's interesting, like, you know, there, like, Wisconsin was expecting to, you know, kind of get a boost from the experience that it's bringing back. I mean, Michigan State's the exact same way. And obviously they have the NCAA tournament run versus Wisconsin's NIT run. So, you know, there was a little bit of a thought that Michigan State had a leg up there. But, you know, the Spartans have obviously suffered some early setbacks. They lost their season opening game to JMU, which, you know, I believe, you know, at least for a while was a top 25 team. I don't know if they still are. But yeah, I mean, Wisconsin, obviously, you know, they know Michigan State really well. You know, they play them every single year. There's a little similar to Marquette. They're playing a lot of the same guys on Michigan State this year as they did last year, with the exception of a few. But yeah, I mean, Wisconsin obviously has to, whatever happens in Marquette, they have to just shake it off. You know, I mean, it would be great if they could carry some momentum from the Badgers' perspective into that game. But even if they lose big, I mean, you know, it's just so critical in this stretch that you just can't get complacent with where you are, you know? And, you know, as I was saying before, like, if you lose, you know, we're going to talk about Arizona in the future, but, you know, if you lose two of those three heading into another top five matchup with Arizona, you're in trouble, because you're in danger of putting yourself in a position where you're 5-5 going into a stretch of non-conference play where you could only get two more wins before Big Ten play opens in earnest. So, you know, it's tough. I mean, the Badgers really can't afford to kind of let these games get the best of them, if that makes sense. But yeah, I mean, I'd be interested to see how they play against Marquette, because I thought that they played pretty well against Tennessee until the final moments. They criticized their defense a lot in that game, and you could see why. They just weren't getting the stops that they needed to at the end. But then they came out against Providence and just didn't show up at all. So, you know, those tough games into another tough game, tough loss into another tough game, to this point of the season, obviously it's still early and there's only really been one example, hasn't been so great, but this stretch, I think, is almost more important now that you dealt with sort of those losses at the beginning of the year.
Yeah. And, looking back, Michigan State, they are part of the receiving votes crowd with the latest AP poll, 57 votes, for this week's poll. So I was gonna say, with everything else and what you've all done, I mean, you even had a how to watch, obviously, for women's volleyball, because they're starting their NCAA tournament run this weekend by hosting inside the field house. But what else you got coming in for men's basketball, going before and after the Marquette game?
Yeah, working on obviously a few things. I got a story publishing tomorrow morning on AJ Store, something that the Badgers have talked about, and specifically Greg Gard, is, you know, he's playing a little bit more off of 2 feet, in the sense that, you know, a lot of his drives to the rim, while, you know, encouraging and, you know, strong, have, you know, ended with a little bit of wild attempts at the rim. Whereas in the last couple of games, I feel like he's figured something out. And Greg Gard agrees, where, you know, he's launching off of 2 feet, maybe stopping in the lane, taking an extra beat. And, you know, his efficiency has gone up. And that's a really big thing for Wisconsin, because, you know, I mean, if his scoring numbers have to go down before they go up, that's all going to be for the better in the long run for a guy who's just a sophomore. So, you know, I think they expect to have AJ around for, you know, a couple years if his development goes as they hope it does. And, this is already a positive development. It's still early in his, what all the Badgers coaches would call his freshman year with the Wisconsin program. So, even though he's a sophomore, so got them there, and obviously a lot of Marquette coverage, coming up on Saturday. Then afterwards, kind of just go right into Michigan State. I mean, you know, it's, I guess that's life of a basketball beat writer. You know, you just don't rest in between games.
Absolutely. And of course, you will, you know, Mike, we'll look forward to your coverage, man, coming up. That's it for another edition of the Badger Extra podcast. Make sure you follow us on, gosh, Apple, Google, Spotify, wherever podcasts are. Leave us a review. Let us know what we can do better. I'm always, always up for feedback to make our products better, so that y'all will listen or read. For that matter, too, BadgerExtra.com. Great stocking stuffer for your loved ones that are Wisconsin fans. Unabashedly, and, you know, obviously I'm subjective here, but we have the most extensive coverage of Wisconsin athletics with just the manpower that we have in terms of covering the various sports across the University of Wisconsin athletic program, or department, I should say. And for that matter, I'll stop rambling. Have a great start to December coming up. We'll talk to you next week on another edition of the Badger Extra podcast.